This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio, and it is not just any show. It is the start of our NFL previews. The AFC East will be on tap this week. We will do a division every single week all the way through to the start of the season. And today we will be focusing on the Buffalo Bills, the team that is projected to be the top team in a very, very tough division given what the Miami Dolphins have built up, Aaron Rodgers with the Jets. But the Buffalo Bills have sort of been a team that has been knocking on the Super Bowl door for a number of years, yet they have not been able to get through despite playing well during the regular season. We all know what happened to them last year with DeMar Hamlin, and I said I think the team was looked a little different after that. They just did not appear to be the same. How will they look in 2023? We've got that coming up later on in the show. We've also got the All-Star Game and the All-Star Week coming up in Major League Baseball. Home Run Derby is tonight, and then the All-Star Game will be on Tuesday. Brett Boone will join us in hour number three. We'll talk to him about not only his career, but the All-Star Game and Major League Baseball and where it's at. Sort of a state of the game sort of look. But I want to start with the normal complaint I have sometimes with members of the media. I know that being in this business for a long time, I've seen the evolution of this sort of clickbait headline sort of approach. It's kind of been the norm of newspapers for a long time. A headline writer at a newspaper is one of your top guys, right? It's been that way for decades and decades and decades, almost since the invention of the newspaper to begin with. There's always been an appeal to give you some reason to buy the newspaper, and that's what the headlines do. And it doesn't change when we go into the internet, into the click business. But I have a complaint here, and I think that it's pretty valid. And that is, last night in the summer league game for the San Antonio Spurs, Victor Wembanyama, the number one overall pick, scored 27 points. And I saw this phrase that was used on a couple of times where Victor Wembanyama answered his critics by scoring 27 points after he only had 9 in his summer league debut on Friday night against Charlotte. And I get it. I mean, it's just a simple phrase that's not doesn't really harm anybody, but I'd like to know who these critics are. I'd like to know who these people are that were saying after game one of a summer league event in Las Vegas, yeah, I don't really know. I don't really see it. 9 points. I don't get it. I think it's going to bust out. I don't understand why San Antonio made the selection.
He's a bust, Tony.
Who are the critics that he had to answer to? Now, listen, don't get me wrong. I don't think there were any. There might have been a few. I don't think there were very many prominent ones. I think this is just an easy way to say, hey, look what he did. He scored 27. He only had 9, but he's bounced back nicely. It's just a phrase that I think gets tossed around. But if there are critics, please point them out. Please point them out. I told you guys last week that I think the Victor Wembanyama-Brandon Miller game from Friday night was hyped up because I think the NBA loves the attention of Summer League, and Summer League is pretty cool. It's a good way to see young players. It's kind of a neat setting. But it is absolutely, positively not the be-all, end-all of anything. I mean, once a player goes to Summer League to sort of work out with the team, they go back, they take time off, and then they join the camp, the real training camp. And then, as every single rookie knows, you go through the learning curve of the NBA. There's a lot more than just being able to play good basketball. LeBron James talked about this. Kobe even talked about it. There is a way a rookie has to digest everything that's in the league. It is not just, well, I'm just going to play the best I possibly can. You have to learn arenas. You have to learn officials. You have to learn the flows of your own team, coaching staffs, you veterans who just don't want to take anything, you know, any crap. You know, there's a whole bunch of elements to a rookie's development into the NBA. And that process does not start in the summer league. That process starts in training camp when they meet in September. This is just exhibition basketball. Some of the guys Victor Wembanyama is playing against won't be on NBA rosters. That's the whole point of what you're seeing in summer league. So I know we are a quick grab society, right? We want to grab takes. We want to grab analysis. I love, for example, when I see an article where I see writers do instant analysis. But the instant part is not lost on me. I know that they're reacting to something instantaneously without any real processing. So, again, I get why there is a little bit of laziness in the way you want to describe this in a headline, but answering critics sounds like Victor Wembanyama's summer league debut was such a bust that everyone came out of the woodwork to wonder what the hell San Antonio was thinking in the first place. And for a summer league game, I mean, is that what we're doing here? Somebody tell, because I don't know what the rules are for summer league basketball, because I thought I knew what the rules were, but are the rules going to change without me? I mean, are we really taking these games that seriously? Are summer league contests in Las Vegas, where there's a lot of partying going on and a lot of just get through the motions kind of thing, sometimes the head coach isn't even there? Like the Denver Nuggets, Mike Malone is not coaching the Denver Nuggets team. Monty Williams, who's now the new head coach in Detroit, is not coaching the team. They go, hey, assistant coach, how would you like to run the summer league event? Yeah, great. Get to go to Vegas for a couple of weeks. Have a good time. Let me know how some of the guys did. Like, that's what we're talking about. A bunch of young players trying to get on NBA rosters or guys that are going to be on NBA rosters getting some work done. It's mostly rookies and first-year players. And the media has to pretend like everyone is now, I don't see an NBA player in Victor Wembanyama. Thank God he scored 27 last night. Otherwise, we'd be all scratching our heads and wondering how he got in the building in the first place. Seriously. Again, it's just a little rant, but it's just a way to start the morning, I guess. All right, so the All-Star game tonight is going to be Tuesday in Seattle. Sorry, All-Star weekend or week starts tonight in Seattle. Home Run Derby and then the game on Saturday, Tuesday. I'm all bouncing all over the place this morning.
Yeah, what's going on?
I apologize. I don't know. I'm just kind of – my computer is doing a weird thing, and I'm trying to look away because I don't want to get distracted.
You know what it is? It's summertime.
Yeah, that's probably what it
summertime.
Is.
Summertime. All the days kind of mesh together.
All right, I'll tell you exactly what's going on with my computer. So I have my computer in front of me is going blank and then coming back on and then going blank and coming back on, and now I feel like any moment it's going to crash. Is that – like it's – okay, now it's stopped. I wish I could. Can we teach IT classes in high school? Now, when I was in high school, there was no such thing as I. The computer was the special room you had to get permission to go into.
No.
To go use the school's one or two computers.
In fact,
that we
the
had.
Class that we took that's offered closely to computers in high school was a typing class.
That's
they
it.
Don't even
that's
offer that anymore.
It. That's basically it. So I think it's fine now, but it does its own thing. I don't know what it does. It just went blank, came back on, went blank, came
Gremlins.
Back on. It's blank. It was flashing. Now it's done. It's like it was going, hey, we're doing something. You don't need to know, smarty pants. We're doing our own thing over here. You just do you, and we'll take care of it.
I'll tell you what sports to talk about.
Exactly.
We're bringing up badminton.
So that threw me off a little bit as I made the All-Star game next Tuesday night. It's tomorrow. So in Seattle. So.
And the Home Run Derby's tonight, then.
And the Home Run Derby's tonight, yes.
Which is always fun. I'm
I like
so,
Home Run Derby.
I love this. I mean, I keep saying it's like I feel like I broke a record year after year, but I love that they changed the format to this.
I do, too. I love it.
It flows so much quicker. You don't have one guy up there for, 10 days.
I think it's
You're
great.
Just hacking
yeah.
away
oh,
at.
That was look, the Home Run Derby is a perfect example of what you do where you love the idea but you don't know your concept, right? Like you love the the idea but you don't know how to put it together. You just you fiddle with it but you don't give up on it. You don't say, "Okay, we can't do this anymore because players are up there forever." You go, "No, let's change it. Let's we love this, but let's just fix it so the players aren't swinging the bat 90 times." Up at the plate. No, I totally get it. It works. It seems to be fun. Yeah, there are players that go, "I don't want to do it." Some players say, "Sure, I want to do it." In the end, you get some pretty good hitters up there.
And I think there's some
time.
Players that are afraid of the curse that comes with it.
Oh,
it's not really a curse. It's just that, if I hit all the home runs now, I won't have any left over for the season.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. Stop thinking like that, by the way.
Yeah.
Like if you're a professional ball player, pretend like you can hit a home run anytime you can.
Just do what every other normal baseball player does. Just wear the same socks the entire time. Or be like Michael Jordan, wear your college shorts underneath your uniform.
I was looking at the starting lineups, the starters. Who got the, well, I have to change that because it's the players that have earned the starting nod.
Yes.
That's a better way to put that than the starters, because the American League has two outfielders that won't be playing on Tuesday night, Mike Trout and Aaron Judge, who are starters but won't be available for the American League due to injuries. So that kind of stinks.
And how is Aaron Judge still in the conversation? Has he played this season?
Yeah, he has. He has been on the IL twice, and the Yankees are like 11-30 without him or some ridiculous number.
Isn't there a point that's like, you know what, Aaron, you are an all-star in our books, but not this year.
Yeah, right, exactly. But we have reached the halfway point of the Major League season. We all get to take a break until Friday and enjoy the festivities and then begin the stretch run. I've said all last week, I think Major League Baseball does its all-star right. It does its all-star festivities correct.
So much better.
It's so much better than anybody else. I think it's an afterthought to the other leagues. It seems to be very important to baseball today.
Is it because we don't – I'm trying to think of a way to put this. The Pro Bowl is terrible because the guys don't play.
Right.
NBA is terrible because the guys don't play. Baseball, I guess, still works on a level, even though – because you still play. I mean, these guys still play because they're still trying to get hits. And if you're trying to get hits, then you're going to try to field it. I'm trying to figure out that word that I'm looking for, but I can't figure it out.
There isn't an element of the All-Star game that has to be nullified. You don't see pitchers still pitch, hitters still hit.
Yeah.
Like in the NBA, they don't play defense. In the NFL, they don't even want to tackle. NHL, they don't check. There's nothing.
And pitchers, and it's funny because pitchers have always pitched only one inning because there's so many of them.
Yeah, that's right.
That
so
you had to get them all in.
Change them in all the time.
So you're not ruining arms.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest games to sort of follow from a box score standpoint, but it's good. All right, coming up next, we'll get to the Northwestern situation that made news over the weekend and the proper punishment for Pat Fitzgerald, if you even think he deserves one. We'll come up next.
Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call. We've got John Scott's going to join us from Spectrum News 1. Covers the Buffalo Bills. They're our first team out of the gate this week. If you are a fan of anybody from the AFC East, this is your week. We do a division a week, so we'll talk Buffalo Bills in our season preview. We're going to do all 32 teams leading up to the start of the season. The Bills are on the clock today.
And one thing that crossed my mind was that it probably makes sense that they're our first team out of the gate, because you and I both had them winning the Super Bowl last year.
That's right. Exactly.
So, you know, they got to be number one in something.
Miami's going to be on their heels. Maybe the Jets will be on their heels. But Buffalo is a team that I don't know. I mean, again, I don't think you could ever equate the kind of pain that city went through with four Super Bowl appearances and four straight losses. But there is everybody knows in the NFL there's a window of time, and you better take advantage of it. And the Bills are almost at the expiration point of this window. Even though they have Josh Allen, they may be at the expiration window of some of the guys that are on that team. And you got to capitalize soon. You got to get to the end zone soon, to use a cliche. But we'll start with them this week. This Pat Fitzgerald story out of Northwestern is kind of interesting. So he's the head coach at Northwestern, head football coach at Northwestern, and the student newspaper at that school had sort of used anonymous sources to detail hazing that had been going on in the football program and had been going on in the football program for a number of years. And so the school has suspended Pat Fitzgerald 2 weeks without pay into an investigation of these hazing allegations. Now, there had been another one just a couple of years ago, so this is not new territory for Northwestern and the head coach. But what's interesting about this one is that the president of the school, Michael Schill, had said something that I think sort of bears an overall larger look. And he said, so there was a confidential report, and they were looking into it, and he said this. He said, the confidential report concluded that while there was corroborating evidence that hazing had occurred, there was no direct evidence that Coach Fitzgerald was aware of the hazing. In determining an appropriate penalty for the head coach, I focused too much on what the report concluded he didn't know and not enough on what he should have known. Now, this statement is if you really, without comparing incidents, because there's hazing at Northwestern, and then there was a stripper with recruits at Louisville, but it's sort of the same reasoning behind both schools' decisions with both Rick Pitino at Louisville and Pat Fitzgerald here, which is what they did in Louisville was they had all these assistant coaches bringing in these strippers for recruits, entertaining them. But what they did was they created sort of a system in which Rick Pitino didn't know anything about it, right? Plausible deniability. They made it so that he did not know. So when he was asked about it, he said he had no idea what was going on in his program. But the school back then said the same thing that that Michael Schill is saying at Northwestern. It's your responsibility to know what's going on. It's your responsibility to know how your recruits are being treated, how the assistant coaches are entertaining them. It's like, that's your job. Your job is to be fully aware of your program. And if you're not aware, why aren't you aware of something that big? So that's what basically Michael Schill is saying about Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern. Look, there may have been hazing that has gone on because boys be boys sometimes, right? But in the end, this is your job as a head coach to determine if this is actually taking place, or at least to have a feeling of that players could go to you and say, I didn't come to Northwestern for this. You recruited me, I came in, and now I'm being hazed, sometimes in a sexual way that makes me uncomfortable. I don't like this at all. This is not why I came here, coach. You need to foster an environment where players are that can come to you and not feel like, well, you're just a part of this as well. So hazing has been going on forever, right? It's been one of those sort of collegiate traditions from fraternities to sports teams to whatever, right? And over the last number of years, we have sort of seen it for what it is, and the society has shifted from a boys will be boys mentality, which it always had for a long, long, long time, and some even seeing it as sort of a passage to manhood, right? Having your peers haze you and then accept you, et cetera, into a point now where we just don't tolerate it anymore. Remember the old days? I mean, you have to go way back, but remember the old days you were taught how to handle a bully? Remember, if you were bullied, you were taught how to handle a bully. Now it's no more bullying, right? No more bullying. They don't even go, well, that's just going to be part of the deal. It's the way hazing has been treated. They don't even say, well, young men will be young men. That's just the way it is. That's the way it is on football teams or basketball teams or whatever. They go, let's nip it in the bud and just make it so that it's not around anymore. But let me just make this observation here. The school isn't interested. I'm just speaking my own opinion here, that the school isn't interested in Johnny's feelings being hurt because he doesn't like to be hazed. They're not interested in the overall destruction of the hazing ritual within its program for some sort of larger moral belief. They're really interested in making sure Johnny doesn't get hurt getting hazed and that mom and dad sue the school for $50 million. That's basically what this is. This is why you come after the coach. You're not coming after Pat Fitzgerald because he is tolerating something that is morally wrong. He is a liability if he allows this to be involved in his program. Now, we're not talking like towel smacking and that kind of stuff, because if you let it go unchecked, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and it could lead to something where somebody gets seriously hurt or in some cases die. And that's what they're fighting for. That is what they are really mad about. Because if you say, hey, guys, we can't allow this anymore. You know how litigious people are in this country. They're going to come after us for $100 million if Johnny sustains an injury that leaves him in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. Or worse, he's not around anymore. So we got to cut this stuff out. And you're responsible for cutting this stuff out. In the end, you have to foster an environment where it's not tolerated. Like with that movie with Colonel Jessup, right? If your orders are always followed, there shouldn't have been any reason to get him off the base. That kind of feeling. You're the head coach. You should say, I will not tolerate any hazing. And any accusation of hazing, you're off this team. And anybody who does it, they're doing it because they're directly violating your law and your rule in that locker room, and you have to enforce it. If you say it, but you're wink-winking on that side of things, then that doesn't count. It doesn't count. It doesn't count because you went through it and made you a better player, or you went through it and it fostered a better community and a tighter relationship with your teammates. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. This is where the legalese department comes in and goes, guys, you're on the hook for this if somebody gets hurt. If you let this go unchecked and they decide that Johnny needs to drink this or jump off this or whatever it is, he gets hurt. We are on the hook for this because he's under our care. Now, what's interesting about this is Pat Fitzgerald, who's been there at a long, long time, since 2006, and he's an alumni of the school, which, as Pat Forty points out in Sports Illustrated, is exactly what you want when you're looking for a coach. Somebody that's good, they're an alumni, and they'll be around for a long time, spurning other offers to go someplace else. If you can find a guy with those three qualifications, you've landed a home run. So Northwestern has felt that they have landed a home run in Pat Fitzgerald, a guy that played at the school, pretty good head coach for given what Northwestern is, and he's not interested in leaving for some other green pasture. He wants to stay at good old alma mater and be the coach there for a very, very long time. But this could derail that. Now, I will say this. Good on the students at Northwestern's journalism program for being willing to uncover something like this. Normally, you don't see this everywhere, but sometimes the more bigger issues within a college program come from the student newspapers. They're within the community, they're tight in the community, and people feel like they can go to them for some reason because they may go to a lot of professional media outlets are a little worried about how they attack a school, because if they attack a school and it goes in the wrong direction, then they lose access to, and that's an important part of the program. You see this a lot of times at big universities that where I need access to the coach, I have to be a little careful in what I report about the coach, because if it fails or there's nothing to that, or he's just suspended 2 weeks and the problem goes away, my institution then has a relationship with that coach that's not on good terms, and I need it to be on good terms. Student papers don't have that issue at all. They don't worry about that at all. They're part of the school, so they just report what they report. They get attacked. Other students have attacked student reporters for a variety of different things. I mean, you can go through the history of student reporting on athletic programs to find where some of them have really, really felt the heat. But it's not like a newspaper that has a beat writer or two or three beat writers at a particular athletic program. What do I think will happen to Pat Fitzgerald? I think he's going to get a longer suspension, if not fired. Now, I don't know as much about of everything that's gone on there other than what's been reported and what's been uncovered. But I think Northwestern has opened the door on this. I think Michael Schill has opened the door on this with these statements. If you come out and say, I'm holding the coach accountable for what he didn't know, then we are expecting another thing, because the side that he's taking is, I didn't know this was going on. And if you have a problem with that, then you're going to have to increase this suspension. We will see where that one goes. All right, we'll continue. We'll talk Buffalo Bills as we preview one of 32 teams next.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Oh, by the way, I signed up for Threads over the weekend.
Did you?
The Instagram thing, yeah.
Is it Instagram Instagram or Twitter?
Instagram
or?
And Meta?
Meta, Facebook.
Know. But I wanted to use Tony D Radio because my last name is Desiri and it's got a lot of vowels, so it's difficult to spell. And so people mess it up and whatnot. And I couldn't do it because my Instagram isn't that. So I guess I have to change Instagram in order to change that. I don't know how it works. But anyway. You want to hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
Not on Thread yet.
Not on Thread. I'll figure out Threads down the road. Philip on Twitter, you just don't have guys like Josh Hamilton hitting 71 home runs in the first round. Like, I like the new format though. I do too. But I am with you. But I don't want to see Josh Hamilton hit 71 home runs in the first round.
Yeah, because remind me. Like, he hit 71 home runs, but he didn't win, right?
I don't remember. I don't think because
I think he hit 71 and then he fizzled away.
Yeah, that's yeah. So,
but this one, I mean, it's straight. What, 5 minutes? I think.
Yeah.
Right. It's 5 minutes
keep,
and
keep the time.
No more, no less.
Is Pete Alonso still one of the favorites?
I think so.
He likes the event. Randy Arozarena is in it.
Yeah, he's a champ. He's the reigning champ, right?
I think he is. Oh wait, who won it last year?
I think it was Randy.
Was it Randy Arozarena?
I think so.
I thought it was Juan Soto. No, maybe not. I don't remember.
I don't remember. Like, I can remember who won the World Series. Or I can't remember who wins All-Star games and other the fun little things.
Current champion is Juan Soto.
Is it Juan Soto?
Yeah.
Well, maybe my brain hasn't failed me just yet.
Nope.
I haven't fallen apart just yet. Again, we'll talk Buffalo Bills with John Scott. He is with Spectrum News One out in Buffalo on the Bills on our first day of previews. And a team that I find very, very interesting because I was saying earlier, what's going on there? Like, seriously, what's going on there? Do we look at the Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, or the Stephon Diggs situation? Do we look at it as a problem, or has it gone away? There hasn't been any buzz about it yet. Is it still an issue there? Is it a big deal? Little deal? Is it no deal? How do we look at the Bills? And what are some of their acquisitions and some of their departures? How is it going to affect a team that, you know, wins the division? They went 9-2 against the AFC last year. They were one of the top teams. You could say I was really looking forward to them going into the postseason last year, and then they really did look differently after the DeMar Hamlin Monday night game. But that's understandable. I mean, so it's not really something that's a football thing. It's more of a mental thing. And now you still have Josh Allen. You still have Stephon Diggs. You still have Sean McDermott as the head coach. You still have good defensive players, a really solid defense. There's still a lot of things that make Buffalo a Super Bowl contending team, except I feel like people will go into this season and go, yeah, I wasn't really impressed with them when they lost to Cincinnati at home. There's some context to that. I mean, there is some context to that, but they are still a team to be reckoned with. So how will we look at Buffalo this season against in a division where Miami is ready to take a step up? The Jets have got Aaron Rodgers now, but the Bills went 13-3 last year. They won the division rather comfortably and were tops in a lot of categories. They were top five in a number of categories, including they were the second best team in terms of scoring points. Will that be different? Or is there a drama here that has to be fixed, and that could be a problem in a division where you just can't take a break for 2 seconds? You better have everything together and everything lined up. I'm not sure. I know that the one thing that I like about this resurgence is it took a while to get that way. I mean, look, Buffalo went to 4 Super Bowls, lost, but that was 30 years ago. But they were relevant for a really long time. And they weren't a team that could find their way into the postseason. But one of the reasons behind that was the Patriots were really good. They dominated for 20 years. So 20 years they were playing in a division where the best team in the NFL happened to be in their division. But now they've broken out of that. They drafted the right quarterback. They have built a solid team around him. They have found the right head coach in Sean McDermott, although you can make the argument that McDermott hasn't handled the Josh Allen thing the Stephon Diggs thing very well because of the way he talked about it and how concerned he was. When a coach says he's concerned about something, it's going to lead to the media and fans being concerned. One of the things you've got to do as a coach, you've got to deflect. You can't always be honest. It's sort of part of the trade. You sort of know that a coach isn't going to tell you everything because the moment they open their mouths and say X, it leads to Y, Z, Q, all these questions. So when they went from Stephon Diggs, yeah, I'm concerned about him. And then they went, oh no, it's no big deal. It's nothing. Well, there, somewhere in between that issue got resolved to a point where you go from concerned to fixed. How do you do that? Like how did that happen? So I find this team really fascinating. I like them. I obviously don't root for them when they play Pittsburgh, but I want them to be successful. I felt for Buffalo in the 90s, man. That was painful. I mean, when they lost to the Giants, I thought I was excited because my father was a Giants fan. I thought that was pretty cool that the Giants under Jeff Hostetler had won a Super Bowl. I thought that was a pretty good story. And then they beat the juggernaut team. You know, the Giants they went to San Francisco. They beat the 49ers to win the NFC that year. When they went to the Super Bowl, there was only one way they were going to win that game. They needed good defense and ball control. They did that. And they won the game, and I felt bad for Norwood, but I was excited for the Giants. Then Washington the next year in Super Bowl 26, and the Redskins just sort of beat them out. And then Dallas just destroyed them. I mean, destroyed them in Pasadena. By the way, you were at that game, right?
Yeah.
Super Bowl 27?
The one in Pasadena, yep.
That was just on NFL Network over the weekend. The replay of that game. Yeah, I was
Did you see me?
The channels. I was looking for you in the stands.
Yeah.
That 100,000 people, so I said, I got a good shot.
I'm
going to
need
all
the haystack. I think
it
was like on the 20-yard line.
Nice.
But I was beneath the press boxes, so I was in the shade, which was also nice.
By the way, how did that come about? Who took you, and how did they get tickets?
I went there with my stepbrother, and my stepfather was the one who landed tickets through
his
job.
Very good, very cool. That's great.
And because he was in a firm, and he was only allotted a certain amount of tickets because they were supposed to go to clients, and. But they had like a couple left over, and since they couldn't decide, it wouldn't be fair. Oh, we'll send this guy or that guy. They decided to give it to the older kids of the firm.
Nice.
And so I happened to be one of them.
That's great. Good for you.
It was great. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Time, yeah.
That was the one where I think Garth Brooks sang the national anthem. Michael Jordan performed at halftime. Performed at halftime. But the one thing I always remember was knowing Don Beebe was going to tackle Leon Lett.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You can see it from a mile away. It was like, it's happening.
It's and Dick Enberg was on the call, which was really cool to rewatch. I watched a good portion of it, just had it on yesterday, and Dick Enberg was calling that.
But I think, AFC East fans are going to battle with me on this one, but I think there is a soft spot across the country for Buffalo.
I do agree. I agree. No doubt. I think, especially if you were around and cognizant of that era.
Yeah.
There was a period of time where America, you got to remember, they hated the idea of Buffalo going to Super Bowl 27, and they really hated the idea of them going to Super Bowl 28. I mean, when they went to their fourth one, America was like, enough of this team. They've had their chance. They blew it. Why are we doing this again, for the love of Pete?
To Buffalo's credit, they should have won that first one they went to against the Giants.
Sure.
Scott Norwood should have put that through the upright.
They're a better team.
But it was Washington, right?
Washington was the second one.
Second one, Washington, then the two Cowboy ones.
And Washington that year, I think, went 14-2. So that was Mark Rippon's fantastic season for the Redskins. They were great.
The Bills weren't even in those three Super Bowls at all.
Yeah.
And then, it kind of put that exclamation point on the fact that the NFC is extremely dominant over the AFC.
Extremely dominant. And then the last one was in Atlanta. And that was, whereas the first one was a little bit more of the Aikman to Michael Irvin, Dallas's defense, the 9 turnovers, the second game was really Emmitt Smith. They gave it to Emmitt Smith over and over again. He just kept pounding out first downs and just wore down that Buffalo defense. And Marv Levy just said, I got nothing. I got nothing for this. And so we had four Super Bowls where this team lost. And then they just went, that's it. Like, they had some of the best players in the NFL.
Oh, my God.
And they could not turn it into a championship. And then the team went dormant forever.
Decades.
I mean, forever.
They
did make the playoffs with Doug Flutie. They lost the Music City Miracle to the Tennessee Titans. But never knocked on that Super Bowl a door again until a couple of years ago when they were 13 seconds away in the playoffs against Kansas City, where they could knock off the Chiefs and win at Arrowhead. They last year, there was a feeling like, okay, when they get to the playoffs, it's still a team. It's got home field advantage.
But I am curious.
It's like Kansas City.
Like you've been saying all morning long, it's like, I am curious, did that, the DeMar Hamlin situation, how much did that affect the team?
Exactly.
Because they weren't the same team in the playoffs.
No, without question. They just were not. So John Scott's going to join us. We'll talk Bills again, a team a day all the way through. Oh, I should say a division a week, because Friday is our wrap up the division show. As we continue along, NFL previews on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, today is day one of our NFL previews. This week it's the AFC East, so we'll have the Dolphins and the Patriots and the Jets later this week. Buffalo Bills are the team we're focusing on today. But before we get to John Scott on our progressive guest line, whether you're in the dugout or the backyard, you can now get Rufus Teague's award-winning barbecue flavors in their new line of barbecue nuts, crunching corns, and sunflowers spitting seeds. Find all the best in barbecue goods on Amazon or at RufusTeague.com. Rufus Teague's full line of super premium barbecue sauces and rubs are sure to make your dinner, tailgate, or competition barbecue the tastiest it can possibly be. Rufus always says good sauce makes bad barbecue good and good barbecue gooder. All right, John Scott joins us on a progressive guest line from Spectrum News One to talk about the Buffalo Bills. All right, John, thanks for joining us and helping us with this. Real quick, right off the top, the Stephon Diggs drama that occurred not that long ago, has that been resolved or a feeling like that has been resolved?
According to the team, it has. According to Sean McDermott, the last day of mandatory minicamp almost 3+ weeks ago, he said that he felt that it was over. The issue here is we have yet to hear from Stephon Diggs, and because of that, there still is this unresolved what in the world is and was all of this even about. So it's still going to be arguably the number one topic of conversation when we head to training camp in just over 2 weeks. So is it resolved? The team, the organization, the parties involved are saying it, but until we hear from Stephon Diggs, which we haven't locally since I would say maybe November, early December, he was absent from talking to the media, even the back end of the regular season and in the playoffs last year. So until we hear from Stephon and he does or does not give us any more detail on what the issues have been, it is unresolved in terms of the greater Bills fan base and media.
And on one hand, you've got professional athletes that's supposed to compartmentalize things and get the job done. But on the other hand, there's always a concern is that when there's a crack in the armor, you can't afford that in a division as tough as the AFC East. So how concerning is this for the organization as a whole?
I think, well, Sean McDermott kind of lit the fire on all of this when the first day of mandatory minicamp, after Stephon had missed all of the voluntary OTAs portion of the offseason, Stephon wasn't there. He said he wasn't there, and when asked how concerned he is, Sean McDermott said, "I'm very concerned." So even though he backtracked a day later and tried to fan the flames and say that everything is all good, again, until we know exactly what the issue was, how do you know it's not going to arise again? How do you know that it truly is remedied and that all is good between all the parties involved within the organization and Stephon Diggs? So concerned? I don't know if I'd go that far, but it's going to be a constant conversation, and you're always going to have your eye out to see, all right, when is Stephon Diggs have his next blow up on the sidelines, whether it's directed towards Josh Allen or whomever it may be? And unfortunately for Stephon, the way things ended in Minnesota comes along with him to Buffalo. And sure, while I feel that a lot of it did not surface in the few years that he's been here from what I've seen being around the team daily and being around Stephon daily, I think that this he's a terrible teammate. That rep was unwarranted, at least based on what I've seen here. But this situation, again, has really dug up that old baggage that he had from Minnesota. And unfortunately, that's why I think this also has as much fuel as it does.
What was the big story out of Buffalo in terms of acquisitions or non-acquisitions or however the roster is being shaped for what they needed to get done? What were some of the big issues leading into this upcoming season?
Well, despite being one of the most prolific offenses in football last year, the eye test, if you watch them regularly, it just seemed hard, which is amazing to say when they're averaging 30-plus points a game. But it just wasn't as easy. It wasn't as free-flowing as we'd seen in years past. And that was only in the back end. So that's why the wide receiver conversation has been hot all season, whether it was DeAndre Hopkins, whether it was trying to draft one early in the NFL draft. And none of that happened. They made kind of minor moves with guys that'll fill out the roster in terms of, you know, third, fourth, fifth options. But they never went out and got a big name to pair with Stephon Diggs. And we will see how that works. The team has said we have a lot of confidence in Gabe Davis, who is someone that we knew from the Kansas City game that they lost a couple of years ago. 4 touchdowns over 200 yards. I mean, he has it in him, but he's been inconsistent. And that's something that, especially as last year was his first as the true number two, you need to see more from him. And if you don't, a lot of people are going to go back to the offseason and say, well, why didn't you get DeAndre Hopkins? Why didn't you make a splashy move in the draft? On the defensive side of things, they've had a lot of their core pieces and been able to retain them, and they've been a top five defense for years. Well, you lose your defensive coordinator, Leslie Frazier, who's taken a year off. Sean McDermott now is going to take over the play calling duties. And then the man in the middle at middle linebacker, who's been there for 5 years, Tremaine Edmonds, signed the largest contract for a middle linebacker in NFL history and went on to the Chicago Bears. So that's their biggest missing piece in the middle, is a bunch of what you would call undersized, like 6 foot, 6 foot one guys, 240 pounds. And a lot of them are young. They drafted one in the third round. They drafted one in the third round last year. These are the guys that potentially will be filling that void. So I would say on each side of the ball, it was not getting a big name, prolific wide receiver to pair with Stephon Diggs. And on the defensive side of things, they have a change at the coordinator position and trying to fill their middle linebacker spot.
It's a delicate question, but I want to ask it from last season when with Damar Hamlin and everything that they went through with him, not knowing what he was going to, if he was going to make it, then knowing he was going to make it and constantly concerned about their teammate. How did you see that affect the way they played against New England and then eventually Miami and Cincinnati?
They dealt with a lot of things, and certainly Damar Hamlin was the exclamation point, but we had some incredible winter storms. One moved a game around Thanksgiving. I live 10 minutes from the stadium. I literally snowblowed three times, and we had over 6 feet of snow. And then a month later, there were over a dozen plus people who died in the city of Buffalo with another storm that hit more around the city, but still around the stadium, and it forced the Bills to have to stay in Chicago an extra night around Christmas time. And then, of course, you get to Cincinnati and deal with the Damar Hamlin thing. There's also the owner's wife, Kim Pegula, suffered the same sort of medical issue as Damar Hamlin, but did that almost a year ago now. And Dawson Knox, their tight end, his brother died and passed away before the season. So you had all of this stuff that was already hanging on top of these guys. And then the Damar Hamlin situation, which from being in Cincinnati was the most terrifying thing I've seen in person in my entire life. And so you're right. The New England game, Nyheim Hines with two kick returns. Like, you could see DeMar's in the building. That's the emotional high that they were riding. But they all admitted by the end, and it's not an excuse, but it is a valid thing to bring up, they were just mentally drained. And I think the Cincinnati Bengals very well could be a better football team than the Buffalo Bills. And they sure as heck beat the crap out of them. But I do think there was also a component that these guys were just grinding so hard for so long, mentally as much as physically, that when they got down 14-0, it's like, where do you have reserves in the tank to try to will your way back into the football game against a team that, again, is either just as good, if not better than you?
And there was a period of time for a while where it was like Kansas City, Buffalo, Buffalo, Kansas City. Now it's Cincinnati. You've got Trevor Lawrence, looks like he's picking up a pace. Justin Herbert. I mean, the list is growing with teams. And then there's the division, Aaron Rodgers, and then the Dolphins that are just getting better day by day. How does the window feel with this opportunity to get this team back to a Super Bowl?
I think that is part of Stephon Diggs' frustrations. I think that's part of when people around here, in my opinion, unreasonably, but they bring up, is Sean McDermott the right coach? Because no window in the NFL is as big as it appears. And when they made the AFC Championship game in 2020 and got blown out by Kansas City, and then they should have won the game with the 13 seconds the year after, you felt good. Okay, they're crescendoing. They're moving forward. Well, they didn't. This was a dud. They took a step back this past year, and they've been able to keep a lot of guys and keep the core together. But I think the time is coming where more than maybe one guy in offseason that's been prominent to this run is going to have to find a different place to play or retire or whatever it may be. So I agree that the window is closing, and I do think that this is going to be the hardest test that this team has had to not only win the division but to find their place in the AFC. And a year ago when Russell Wilson comes over, and obviously that didn't pan out, but the talk was, oh my gosh, look at the AFC, and it was powerful, but it wasn't what we thought. And every year you kind of have to let it play out. But I'll add this, all those teams that you mentioned with all those quarterbacks, the Bills play them this upcoming season. Yeah. They play Cincinnati at Cincinnati. They play Kansas City at Kansas City. They play Justin Herbert out in L.A. They play Jacksonville in London. They play all of these teams that are going to be in the running against them, whether it be for the division or seeding in the AFC. So you're really going to get a good feel for truly where they are now, and maybe get a good or worse feel about where their trajectory is the next coming years, based upon what you see on the field.
John Scott, again, with Spectrum News One out in Buffalo, covering the Bills for us as we begin our NFL previews. Thanks so much, my friend. Hope to catch up with you soon.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, hour two is coming up next as Wake Up Call continues. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb, and some more thoughts on this particular team as we get started with our NFL previews. On Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue.